Hello, my beautiful little angel delights. Welcome to episode 4 of Chatting with Shirley the Copcast. I'm in my studio in Canvey. We've got the delicious oriental smells of the golden sun wafting down from above us. I might order myself a set one after I finish this because I deserve a treat. Nothing says well done, girl, like a pork ball and a big stem of brock in some oyster sauce. Milky's behind me, making me sound like an icon. What's that in your mouth? Is that a vape? You ain't doing that in here. Why is there no smoke coming out of it? Give it here. That ain't a vape, Pillock. It's a pregnancy test. What have I told you about fanning about in Poundland, you Wally? That... Honestly, Milky, what are you bleeding like? Oh, there you go. As you can hear, today's song is Rhythm Alive from the album The Greatest Hits, Volume 1. Later on in the show, after I've interviewed my delectable guest, you can hear me tell you a story or two about this song, why I wrote it, and then you can download and stem it in all its glory. Lucky bleeding buggers. Now, if I had to give an example of someone who's living in the rhythm of life, then it'd have to be today's guest. She's a South London girl, one of the UK's biggest talents, but we lost her to the big steak-eating monolith that is the USA. She's living her best life to the bleeding max. Welcome to the Copcast, the beautiful London Hughes.
Oh my God, that is the best intro ever. I loved it. What's a Copcast, baby? What's a Copcast? Sounds like a sex toy.
Oh my God, it probably is.
Hey, Milky.
Why have you got that book covering? Why have you got that book in your lap, Milky? Can you relax, please, back there? Bloody hell, the testosterone in it's killing me.
Tell Milky to call me because it's been a while. And he ain't returning my text.
I know.
And he needs to pay child support. He really does. He really, really does.
Anyone what's listening, I'm in the UK and London is in America. So we're talking, it's 6 o'clock here. What time is it there?
10 a.m.
Oh my God, you got up early for me, gorgeous
girl. I really did. I literally rolled out of bed, rolled into this dress and rolled here. So you're so lucky.
Where are you?
I was... right now, what area? I'm in Los Angeles.
No, but like, where are you actually at? It looks like the Big Brother house.
Oh, I'm literally in my den.
She's got a den.
They call it a den.
Did you hear that? Did you hear that? She's got a den. Cool, she's got a bloody den. What's in the den?
Just pillows and monkey things. And
oh, God, it's a nice sculpture.
It's Planet of the Apes themed. Hey.
What, the room is?
Well, the den is, yeah.
Like the Rainforest Cafe?
Literally, so is that kind of energy? But yes, I'm here in the den right now.
And it looks expensive.
Thank you. I try.
Mind you, I've been seeing your bleeding Instagram posts constantly, and I tell you what, you're living the bleeding life of Riley out there. It's disgusting.
Thank you.
If I see you drinking another bleeding cocktail with 15 garnishes on it, I'll bloody come out and join you. I tell you that
you
for nothing.
To. You
oh well,
need
I would.
To come out.
I'd do it in a heartbeat. I can't go back to America though. I'll shame myself there.
I thought you were banned from America.
Oh well, I am banned from America. Yeah, but that's a different story. But I put a good word in. You know, me and Trump go way back. I've got some dirt on Trump.
Really?
He came down my club, the Flick. I saw him swallow a whole melon. A whole melon. He didn't even blink. It went down. It went down like an anaconda.
You're an idiot.
It's true. But I've got some dirt on him. What did you do last night then? You was out with your girlies last night. Did you know him before?
Do you know what? The people that are my friends, they are actually the help. I say that because I employ them. So like I'm best friends with my business manager and my manager and my accountant. Like they're all just fun people. So we actually hang out and like get drunk and then they can take the bill because they...
You want to watch it out there though, with all those people. But well, seriously though, buying you stuff all the time, treating you. I mean, I'd get carried away. I would.
It happens. You know what? I'm like type of person. If you work with me, I don't even say for me. If you work with me, you're basically family. So yeah, I have a close relationship. But some of them are just my friends that I met out here, and some of them are like actual people that are on my team London. It's about 20 of them, and they're all great people.
God, blimey, you sound like you're bleeding like Lady Gaga or something. Do you know what I mean?
I want to be like Lady Gaga.
So
the dream is to be black Lady Gaga. That's like...
You could do that in a heartbeat.
Thank you.
I mean, one doesn't exist as far as I know.
Yeah, or comedy Beyonce. What's better, Black Lady Gaga or comedy Beyonce?
I think you could do them both quite easy. So you just need to decide and get busy.
And I feel like I need to. I'm going to decide. I'm going to make the decision today.
I can see you walking down some Hollywood Boulevard for a big premiere with a load of pork loins hanging off you. Like the Gaga.
I can see it too.
Couple of streaky bacons.
Oh my God, yes.
You could do a gorgeous little dress like that. But what's everyone make it? What do they make of you in LA? Are they, what's
they
the vibe?
Me.
What's it like? Do you go out? Do you talk? What's the vibe, you know?
Well, obviously we're in a global pandemic at the moment. But the thing is, I moved to LA just before it, like a month before it. So I had a month of crazy fun. And in that month, February, I basically realized that I have American energy, but I just lived in England for too long.
Yeah, so a lot of people say that, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I just was there too long. So, like, in England, I'm just, like, happy, lively, in your face, bubbly. And British people are like, oh, no, she's crazy. I'm so scared of her. But then in LA, they're like, oh, my God, yes, girl, you fabulous. So I kind of met, like, it's where I'm supposed to be. It's where people are, like, just like me. So I'm making a lot of friends very easily. Also, I'm British, and everybody loves the British out here. Everybody.
Oh, they do. I can tell you that I had a few fans out there. No problems there.
Yeah.
But
the
thing is, your outlook has always been, you're very positive. You're very, you know, you talk your mind, but you're always, you believe in yourself a lot, don't you? And the Americans love that. But here they freak out a bit in England, don't they?
They hate all that stuff in the UK. Anything that's like, love yourself, live your best life. They're like, be miserable and eat coal. They don't understand that, like, you can, like, be a nice person, love yourself and live your best life and not be arrogant and still be a good person. So I feel like America kind of get that, mainly because I do think Americans were born with pride. Like, they just teach you, the baby comes out and it's like, pride, pride, pride. Whereas in Britain, we're born with, like, self-deprecation, like, in our veins, you know? So I don't know where that happened to me. I never got it.
Do you think we've lost you to America? You must miss some British things, don't you? Please.
Do you know what I really, really miss? I miss Co-op sea salt and Chardonnay wine vinegar crisps. My God.
They are the best crisps in the world. I can agree with that.
Oh my God.
It's like cracking a bag.
Oh my God.
The vinegar, the vinegar sticks to your fingers like it's bleeding muck. Do you know what I mean?
Oh.
You find it under your nails weeks after.
Oh God, yes. Oh, stop.
Do you know what? I'm going to send you some.
Don't play with my emotions, because I have tried to get it on eBay and you can't even get them on eBay, so don't you dare.
But do you know what? There's been a shortage in here due to that lockdown. I couldn't get
Seriously?
Them in the local co-op. I couldn't. I love a co-op, even though I can't stand the woman in there because she's got these clogs on. The sound of her feet in them, it's disgusting. It's like someone, it's like someone punching a chicken fillet.
Oh, God.
Her walking around in them. I can't bear it. But I face it. I go in there because I love the salt and vinegar crisps.
Oh, mate. That's the main thing. Not family, co-op, sea salt and Chardonnay wine vinegar crisps. Like, that is like, there's no equivalent. There's not anything nowhere near.
But you do love a flaming Cheeto. I've always seen you've got your hand in a bag of flaming Cheetos, to be fair.
But it made me put on weight, surely. I gained like 10 pounds, so I can't eat them no more. Because it's just orange. Like, it's like the food colour orange is just, like,
it's just a bag of orange.
That's the flavour. Yeah, it's just a bag of tangy
dust,
and like, I know it's not good for me, I know it's not, but it's just so good. I feel like half the food that they have out here would be illegal in the UK because of just the goodness in it.
Well, it would be, wouldn't it? I mean, that's the old argument we're having at the minute with the Americans, because they're going to take us over, aren't they? That's what they're all saying with all these new rules and things. I don't like getting into politics, me, London.
Let's not get into politics.
Well, we can do it. We can do it. We're not afraid to do it.
I don't think we're well equipped for doing it, Diane. Me and you together, I'm not sure how much we can solve in terms of the global crisis.
Well, that's true. But we're loving, caring people. So I think we could do a fair bit.
I'm like, can we just not have Brexit? See, look, it's controversial, but I'm like, are you lot still going forward with that? Like, what's UK saying?
It's kicking off here. This just started to now the pandemic's gone down, Brexit's gone up again.
Seriously?
Yeah.
That was an opportunity to say, we're only joking. We don't need it. They're still doing it.
What with that melted Milky Bar at the front? leading our country.
Oh, mate.
You know, there's not much we can do. Oh, Bojo.
Bojo and the clowns. Has he revealed who his kids are yet? How many kids he got? 15?
15. Apparently one of them is Prince Andrew.
Yeah, 100%.
One of them is Prince Andrew, and he just grew old really quickly because he was so panicked.
Has Prince Andrew got in trouble yet? Oh, I'm still waiting. Does anyone care that he's... I'm not even going to say it, but...
There's a lot of people due to be taken down, to be fair. It's coming.
Right, but the way they took down Meghan for eating avocados...
I think what the country don't like about Meghan, apart from what seems obvious and which we're probably all thinking, but she's a strong, independent woman what knows what she wants. And that is what the UK don't like about her.
Don't like that.
You know, she's got too much fierce determination.
That's how they felt about Alexandra Burke on Strictly. When Alexandra Burke was on Strictly... Mm-hmm. She got so much like negative comments, but it was all like, oh, because she's a good dancer, she's arrogant. And it's like, no, she's just a good dancer. Like, I feel like they hate a strong woman who's confident. They do.
Yeah, it's like what you say about yourself, isn't it? People get scared by people who are confident. They think it's confrontational, but it ain't sometimes.
I'm so cute.
Oh my
God. Can you believe I'm single?
I can't believe it. But that ain't going to last long, to be fair.
Are you sure?
Not with those jubblies out and about, I'll tell you that for nothing. You could sell advertising space on them.
Coronavirus is cock-blocking my love life, though, you know?
Like, but aren't you on those apps?
No, I went on Hinge for one day and deleted it because they were all beneath me. Why? Why am I doing all this for a substitute teacher? I don't want no substitute teacher. They're all beneath me. They were beneath me. I said, I'm so stupid. Why have I done this? Literally.
What if it's the love of your life, though?
Nah, I'm good.
There must be a celebrity one, a special one, though, for celebrities, surely.
There is. It's called Raya. But here's the thing. I'm not hot enough for the celebrity one. I'm on it, but the guy's on it.
Oh, come off it. That's rubbish.
Mate, I'm up against models with no personality. That's the thing. That's what they love out here. That's like the dream woman. Is a silent, skinny yoga instructor. That's the dream.
Is it?
And I'm like a gobby, curvy comedian. So I have to offer, that's the nightmare. It's really hard.
You're going to find your match, I tell you that, because I found my gorgeous Ron, didn't I? My beautiful Ron. So if I can find a man strong enough to look after me, you're going to find one that's... Do you know it's about ego, isn't it?
Yeah,
because men sometimes they can't handle a woman with a gorgeous... too much of their own ego. They like someone that... concentrates on themselves.
Because I like to put my dick on the table. Like, I'm very much like, hey, guess what? I make my own money. I probably make more than you. And they're like, ouch, I don't like that. And so I need to learn to be more like, I'm just a delicate flower.
What if someone does like it? That's the problem with masculinity. I touched on it. I spoke to, do you know Raven Smith? I had him on the show last week. But we spoke a little bit about masculinity and stuff like that. And it's ever so interesting when you look at men and the way they act, and I tell you, that's got a lot to do with it. You know, we've got to change. They call it a shift in the paradigm.
Oh, yes, with the big word. Paradigm.
Shift in the paradigm.
Shift in the paradigm. I might have said it.
No, I might have said it wrong.
Oh,
in fact, I'm sure I've said it wrong, but it don't matter.
Is it paradigm? Is it a paradigm shift?
Yeah, that's what it is,
okay,
London.
Okay, but
what
we're going to do is we're going to remix it and say we're shifting the paradigm. Shifting the paradigm with Chorley.
Shifting the paradigm with Chorley. My new podcast about politics. I have to say, and I'll tell you what, people who are listening on the podcast, if there's one show I ever saw that was one of the better, and I mean this in all honesty, I ain't just blowing smoke. Your stand-up show is one of the best stand-up shows I've ever seen. Me and Milky, we went, didn't we, Milky? We was creased over. It was like being in the 1980s, being in the comedy clubs back then, when they came out and they tore it to pieces. None of this special business about, you know, oh, I'm funny, but I'm also an antelope. None of that malarkey. You came out, joke after joke after joke. Oh, the personality was oozing off the stage, painting the walls. No one in there knew where to look because you were smashing the hell out of it. We couldn't believe ourselves. No, it needs to be said. And we've lost you now to the USA. I can't bleed and stand it. I need you up there next to me. Not carved into Mount Rushmore. I need you next to me.
Mate, I might come back. Look, the funny thing is when you leave, that's when they want you back. So yeah, I've had a lot of opportunities.
Well,
whether they can afford me is a different story, but I've had the opportunity.
Oh, she's got sass.
Oh, whether they can afford me now, you should have had me when my stocks were low. And now you're trying to buy when everybody's buying.
But didn't you almost have it? You had a show, didn't you, with Whoopi Goldberg or something?
Yeah.
What happened to that?
So 2 years ago, I got the opportunity to have my own TV show, and the company asked me who I'd want the show to be with. And I just said, Whoopi Goldberg, like you would say, like Frank Sinatra. Do you know what I mean? Just, well, he's dead. So
he's
someone
dead,
alive
yeah.
that's a jazz singer who's amazing. So I was like, Whoopi Goldberg. And then they were like, that's doable. Then they got in touch with Whoopi. Whoopi said yes. And we had this show, and we did, Whoopi was in the taster.
Well, you did it.
For
you
it.
Actually made it.
We made a little like 10-minute taster with Whoopi in it. And I shit you not, no TV channel in Britain, because by then I hadn't been to America, I wasn't doing my thing. But in the UK, no TV channel wanted it. And it was a travel show. And it annoyed me because, no shade, because I still love him, but Russell Howard and his mum has been on his fifth series going everywhere. You got Ramesh Ranganathan and his mum. You got
Bradley Walsh and his son.
And then I was like, who's next? Rob Brydon and his nephew going to get a show before me and Whoopi? And it was just ridiculous. All these men have these travel shows with their friends, with their mums, with their dads. But like me and Whoopi can't get made. But Jack Whitehall and his dad can go everywhere. Like for me, it just felt like, what have I got to do?
Did you get along, you and Whoopi?
Well, the thing is, the show, so she's in the taster, but we haven't met because the premise of the show is I was looking for her. So they didn't want us to meet until I saw her on camera for the first time, because she's she is everything I've ever wanted to be.
Oh, she's an icon, yeah. Adore
she's a complete icon, complete inspiration. And like when I meet her for the first time, I will cry. And they purposely did not want us together so that when we meet, it's just pure and real on camera. Obviously, yeah, we thought the show was going to get made. So, but the show hasn't been made. And that was a reason, one of the reasons why I went to America, because I said to myself, wow, if you can't even get a show with Whoopi Goldberg off the ground,
oh yeah,
then what are you doing? What are you doing in this guy? Like, if I could say to 11-year-old me, like, London, like, you see that woman in Sister Act? There'll be a time when she wants to work with you on a TV show. And then, like, even that saying that out loud, like, is crazy, because 11-year-old me would not believe it in a million years, and then have to say, but that show will not get made because systemic racism means the black women TV shows don't get made or nobody wants them. So it's not going to happen. So yeah, I kind of was like, I've got to leave. I've got to go to America. So when America was like, come over here.
And you think in America, they're better? Do you think at that
kind of
thing?
Do you know what it is? There's more opportunity, full stop, because it's a bigger country. But also there's more black people here. So black, like even if I just had black people as an audience, just solely them, I could still be a millionaire. Do you know what I mean? More than a millionaire. There's comedians that have only performed to black people on what they call the black circuit or the Chitlin circuit, and they're millionaires. So for
me,
would
they call
it
the what circuit?
The Chitlin. Apparently there's a food in America called Chitlin, but apparently like it's from the South. It's a Southern food. And I guess they call it the Chitlin circuit because it's mainly to South. Who knows? But basically,
well, it's interesting.
There's a bigger audience, but also talent talks here. People don't want to miss out on the next big thing. So if you're talented, don't matter if you're black, white, or whatever, you will get more opportunities than the UK. I can't speak for any other countries. I can just speak for compared to the UK. If you're talented, you will go far. So for me, it was just a no-brainer. And then the show you're talking about, To Catch a Dick, I can reveal that it's got a Netflix special. So,
oh my God, is that an exclusive? I'll tell everyone about that.
It's an exclusive. I haven't even officially announced it. No one knows. It's going to be an announcement, but you're my friend.
I'm going to tell everyone to watch it. Honestly, oh my God, I can't wait. We'll have a night in, Milky. I'll let you have a curry. You can have a korma though, nothing more.
You can have a korma, Milky. But it's exec produced. Sorry, my phone's gone off. It's exec produced by Kevin Hart. So Kevin Hart is exec producing the Netflix special of To Catch a Dick, the show that Diane Chorley said was the best stand-up show she's ever seen.
You can use that on the poster.
I don't mind. I want to.
But in Edinburgh, oh my God.
It was a year ago and it was just the craziest year of my life. And then to be the first black woman in British history to be nominated for an Edinburgh Comedy Award.
Oh, I know.
Like, it was just so, like, yeah, August was like, August 2019. 2019 in general was the best year of my life. So now that 2020 has gone to balls, I can't be that mad because my 2019 was pretty cool. But yeah, the special hasn't even come out. The special won't be out until...
Is it recorded?
No, we were supposed to record it in March, but COVID hit. Which means I know. We're still recording it this year. We're trying to find ways to do it that's, you know, COVID friendly. And they're more advanced in America. Like, things are starting to film again. You can do a little COVID test where they prick your finger and it's 15 minutes. You can do a COVID test where they swipe your nose and you find out in a day. So we're going to find ways of doing it. And then it will come out in, hope Netflix wanted to come out around December, around Thanksgiving, Christmas time. So,
oh, I'm so excited. So, that is the best news I've ever bleed nerd.
Fingers crossed. That's made me day. Fingers crossed we can do it. Thank you.
But you can do it. Of course you can do it. Oh my God, I adore it. Now, the thing is with Edinburgh is that you'd been a couple of times before, hadn't you?
The first time I went in 2017, I had a show called London Hughes Superstar Brackets. It's just nobody's realised it, close brackets. And the show was all about me trying to make it in America and be a black female Whoopi Goldberg. Can you imagine?
What's that thing you do when you present something? You make it up, you visualise it. Manifest.
I wrote that show in 2017. I'd never been to America. I'd never met Whoopi Goldberg. And the show ended. So basically, it told the story of my career, or a young black girl who wants to be famous in comedy's career, but is based on my life. But it told it through television. So I used TV to get my point across. So there was like a supermarket sweep bit where I had a trolley on stage and all the props were in the audience, and the audience had to throw in things that would help my career. So into the trolley. I had a Who Wants to Be a Millionaire bit, where I had a voiceover of Chris Tarrant, and it, instead of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, it was, can London Hughes talk to boys now? And it was Chris Tarrant asking me, what do you do when you approach a man? And he's single, but he doesn't seem interested. Do you A? And then the audience had to help me with that. So basically I used TV to tell the story of my career, and it ended with a cliffhanger with a voiceover going, will London Hughes be big in America? Will she get an American agent? Will she ever meet Whoopi Goldberg? Find out in the future. And it all happened. Trust me. So spooky. So spooky. And that was only 2017. That wasn't that long ago. But it got 3 stars at best. 3 stars. 3 stars at best. I have a great Edinburgh story. I have a great, like, Edinburgh revenge story. So when I, in 2017, I mean, I don't know if people know the politics of Edinburgh. They feel like we just go up there and it's all free. And there's like, we just perform in these tiny spaces. It's like, no, it's a lot of prep and planning and money. And basically in 2017, when I was doing London Hughes Superstar, it's just nobody's realized it, I emailed The Pleasance. So The Pleasance is like the best, one of the best places, venues to have your show in Edinburgh. And it like gets a lot of foot traffic. It's prime time, I would say. And I wanted to do my show there. And I emailed the guy who's in charge of it. I won't say his name. And I was like, hi, I'm London Hughes. I've got a show. I'd love to do it there. I think you guys are amazing. I think I could really add to your show this year in 2017. Told him about my show, invited him to watch the show. He didn't reply. He didn't reply. He didn't even say a thing. No reply. That was 2017. In 2019, 2 years later, I did the show To Catch a D, and I got To Catch a D in at The Pleasance, but not through emailing him, through another team coordinating with him, and the show was there. The show, my show at The Pleasance, sold out from, it was a month-long run. It sold out in its first week. Lupita Nyong'o came to watch. Lenny Henry came to watch. Richard Blackwood came to watch. So it was the creme de la creme of people that came to watch my show. It had it had the most 5-star reviews of Edinburgh in 2019.
Everyone was talking about it. It was a big hit.
It was a big hit. And so the guy who owned The Pleasance, he came up to me in a bar and was like, hey, you're London. I'm the man who owns The Pleasance. Thank you so much for everything you've done for the venue. Your show's amazing. Can I buy you a drink? And I was like, I was like, in 2017, I emailed you and asked you to if I could perform in your venue, and you didn't even reply. And that was only 2 years ago. And I just think it's funny that when I was a no one, you didn't even feel to reply. But as a someone, you want to buy me a drink? Yes, I'll have a vodka soda. And then the next day, after he bought me this drink and apologized, he replied to my email from 2017. He found it. He searched for my email. He replied to it. and said sorry and said I'd made him see that you shouldn't overlook talent in the early stages.
Oh, London, that's so a lovely now, story.
Yeah, so now whenever a new talent, you know, emails him, he'll at least reply. Like, even if he replied and said no, I'd be like, he just did not reply. So for me, it was like, yeah, don't wait till I'm awesome to ride this wave. Jump in the boat from early.
So, well, yeah, it's tricky, isn't it? I mean, to be fair, and we've seen it ourselves, and we've spoken about it a bit in the past about, I think, you know, something you were saying about diversity in British TV and all that, and what we've seen in Edinburgh, it ain't necessarily the most diverse place for talent, is it? I mean, every bleeding street corner, there's some kind of a cappella group doing Rocket Man or something.
Oh,
all white and middle class.
Oh, yeah.
All wearing Jack Wills jumpers. And you're thinking, how have you got the money to be up here? But of course, we know where the money's from. And that's the worry, isn't it? With that thing is that a lot of people can't afford to go to Edinburgh, but that's where all the people go and see the talent, isn't it?
Exactly. Mate, I spent 10 grand on my show that no one saw, that got 3 stars at best. London Who Superstar, it's just nobody's realised it cost me 10 grand. And I was in a 100-seater venue performing to, on average, 20 people a day. And
oh, my God. But we've all been there.
Yeah, but that's
there.
What I'm saying. I mean, but that cost me 10 grand. It was 10 grand. Oh,
you don't even want to know how much I've spent.
I could have bought... No, your production value is very high.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Like, every time I've been to a show of yours, the production... Listen, there's no expense spared.
No.
You literally do everything. Like, when was that the flick? The flick last year... Woo! How many boys did I kiss? How many boys did I kiss in your class?
Tell me.
About 5. I feel like I slept with one guy from there. Who was he? I think I tried to kiss Milky a couple times, but he was not having it, not trying to pay his child support. I'm just a baby mother to him.
No payment in kind, Milky. No payment in kind. You've got to pay the dollars. I'll pay you for the shows. You've just got to hand it over. No luncheon vouchers.
You've got to hand it over.
Like. Should have seen the place that we played down in Edinburgh the first time. It was like a mechanics hall or something. I don't know. There was oil everywhere.
Stop.
I kept expecting bleeding Phil Mitchell to walk out with, I don't know, Sharon in a headlock or something. It was bleeding evil in there. I licked the walls, all water. Stalactites and water coming down the wall. I licked it once. I could taste Robert the Bruce.
Stop talking.
Are they stalag? What?
Did you just say stalactites? I am dead. I haven't heard that word since.
Blue Peter.
Year 9 science. Are you crazy? Are you bringing back stalactites into
I'm bringing it back.
Oh, that's my God.
No, London, that's the name in my autobiography. Stalactite.
Oh, my...
The original stalactite, Diane Chorley. What does stalactite go up or down?
Down, and stalagmites go up.
Oh, I might have to call it stalagmite because I'm rising.
Hey.
Do you know what I mean? I ain't going down, I'm going up.
I'm taking
a little leaf out of the London book. I'm picking myself up from now on.
You need to. You're a queen, you know this. You always do.
I'm a bleeding queen. And I do want to talk to you about, you know, it's been a difficult time, and I know that it's a tricky time for everyone in the pandemic and a lot of that, but it's actually been a lot harder, you know, for people of colour and particularly the black community. And I wanted to talk to you a bit about that because we've already touched on it a bit, and I don't want to feel like we can't talk about it because it's something...
Because we're classy. We could talk about everything. And, we could talk about black struggle, politics and
Dick. Of course, and it's scary for people, and it was scary for me, and I had to do a lot of reading, I had to do a lot of learning, and it made me realise a lot
of
things.
You did not read.
I read.
You read.
It was an audio book. But I listened, and I wanted to, and I don't want you to talk about anything you don't want to talk about or feel uncomfortable talking about.
Oh, my babes,
you're
my babes.
But, you know, you're someone I really respect, and you've had to move to America to make your fortune. I feel like there's a deficit, or there must be a deficit here that needs to be looked at and engaged at. And I wanted to hear your opinion about that, if that's all right.
Look at you being all, what's his name? Kilroy. Don't get all
I'm
Kilroy
I'm Robert Kilroy.
Me. Don't be all Robert Kilroy.
He's the wrong person to refer to, though, because he was Independence Party or something. He got a bit dark, didn't he? He got a bit rough and tumble, Kilroy.
No, what's happening right now is the biggest civil rights movement in history.
Yeah.
And it's great that it's happening. Obviously, it's also sad that it's happening. I am feeling all juxtaposed because, first of all, I am very much British. I'm a black British chick, and I think Britain's very racist. But then Americans also very racist, and Americans have guns, and American police can legally kill you as a black person.
It's terrifying.
And I've had to take my career just because just to be successful, I've had to move to a country where the police can legally kill me with guns. And this is how I'm like, it better be worth it. I better end up being Comedy Beyonce. Because
oh, you will, I'm sure.
Look what I'm sacrificing. Like, it must show you how bad it is in the UK if I've left and come here. Regardless, like, you should think about what I put on the line. Like, I probably won't have kids because I would hate for my kids to be killed by a police officer, and I just wouldn't want to put a kid in the world, in that world. I wouldn't have a kid in America. Mm-mm. But like the fact
well,
that
you
I've
will,
had to move
we're
here,
gonna make change. And we're the start of it here, and the change is coming, and it's we got to be positive and say change is coming. And it's our job. It's all our job to do it.
Well, to be honest, I genuinely didn't think that this would be this big. So I'm surprised at how many people care, and white people. It's mainly in America. It's been white people. When I go to rallies and whatever, like protests, it's majority white people. When I went to the first ever protest I went to, there were so many white people there, all our allies. And they were giving out free food to black people. It felt like carnival, but in reverse. It was so weird. I was like, I'm just dancing in the streets with all these amazing white people and they're handing me free jerk chicken. And I'm just like, this is crazy. But it's a protest. And like, it was just the most unifying thing I've ever seen. And apparently in America, none of the 50 states have agreed on anything apart from this. Every single state protested for George Floyd. So that if it's one thing that's good that's happened, it's brought the world together. Yeah. And when I saw the protests in France, in the UK, and like everything that's been going on, I feel good. So you're right. I should be positive. But it's very scary.
I'm not saying you should be positive. I think you've got every right to be whatever you are. I'm not saying anyone should feel anything.
But we're hopeful of change.
We're hopeful for change.
Well, to be honest, let me not even try it at like I'm in the ghetto or in the trenches. Because I'm not. I'm fine. Like, where I live is fine. And not like I've never personally, you know, experienced any of this, but just knowing that it's out there is very much like, you know, it's quite scary. And you know, in Britain, I've genuinely like had a go at a police officer who was annoying me because I was like, oh, basically when I was at university, I went to Kingston University, and Kingston's quite a nice, some of it is quite a nice area. And I'd be driving, well, I didn't drive, my guy that I'm sleeping with is driving, and we're on the way to the club and it's 3 before 11. And then the police guy pulls us over because he thinks that it's the car looks like a car that was, you know, involved in a crime. It doesn't. You're just racially profiling because you see a black couple in a nice car. And so they pull us over. They're like, have you got weed in the car? And we're like, no, we don't. And like, it's just annoying. So I remember going to police officer like, why can't you just arrest some serious bad guys? Because I'm trying to get to the club before 11, it's 10:45.
You've got your priorities,
like,
fair game.
Go at him. Yeah, like it's 3 before 11, what are you doing? And he actually apologized. And he said he was having a bad day and he apologized. I didn't get arrested, it was fine. And I told this story to my black friends in America and they were like, girl, you did what? They were like, you'd have been shot. You'd have been arrested. You said what? You spoke to who like that? No, 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 honey. Mm-mm.
That's terrifying.
Mm-mm. And for me, I'm like, it's crazy that they've grown up in fear of the police or having to treat the police a certain way.
Do you feel it there? Do you feel like in danger?
I don't. I feel fine. But my friends do. Like, because I haven't been brought up in that culture. So when I see police, I don't feel scared. Like, I don't look at, if a police car passes me, it doesn't bother me. But that's because it's never bothered me. But for them, like, you know, they've been in, I've had a friend who's, the police has pulled a gun out on him twice and he's a doctor. Like,
my God.
You know, and it's just like, that's their reality. It's not my reality. And I don't want to be like obtuse, like, oh, I'm fine. Cause I know I'm not. But also they tell me like, I'm British. So like, regardless of what happens, say if a police officer pulls me over and whatever, once I start speaking, there's a British privilege. There's something about Brits in America that there's some form of privilege. And I've noticed it. I get good, like, if I book and make a reservation, if my friend books and makes a reservation, they'll say, we don't have any. But if I call up again and say, can we have a reservation? All of a sudden, a table's free.
That's so like, weird, isn't it?
Stupid stuff like
but
that.
But that must be a lot to do with, I guess, representation in the way people are perceived because of the way they're seen on the media and the press and all that malarkey.
Yeah.
So if we haven't got enough representation of, you know, different communities and different classes and different genders and sexualities and all of those things, then the mind becomes narrower, doesn't it? And therefore, if they're...
Yeah, 100%.
And it's simple as that, isn't it? It's like we need the representation on the TV so people can see people who aren't just, you know, a black youth in a gang crime drama.
Oh, God, yeah.
Or like, I know you've spoken about that before and all those things. We need better representation. Yeah. If you've got to move to Bleeding America to make a Bleeding TV show that ain't based on negative things, about representation that's positive and exciting, that's where the change needs to come, London. Do you know what I mean? Because it is about representation, because they treat you different because they've probably seen Bleeding Mary Poppins.
Exactly. They've seen Mary Poppins. They think British people sound smart. Like, I did a gig in Atlanta and I swear to God, I stepped on the stage and it was predominantly black, southern. It was in a church. There was barbecue in the back, that kind of energy. And I got on stage and they were just like staring at me, so confused. And then this black woman was like, what part of black you from? And I was like, what? And they were like, you sound white. What part of black you from? And I couldn't even answer the question because I was like, what do you mean? What part of black am I from? Oh my God, it was blowing my brain. And then like, after a while, I realized that they would just have never met a black British person before.
That is funny.
So to see one on stage telling jokes, they weren't even listening to my jokes. They were just laughing at the fact that this girl looks like Keisha but sounds like Penelope. So for them, but were they were just like so confused.
That's amazing though. But they loved it, I'm sure, didn't they? They must have loved it.
They loved it. And afterwards, I had a line of women trying to meet with me to give me their son's phone number. They're like, you sound smart. I would let my son date you. And I'm like, oh, great. And it's because I'm British. Everyone thinks the British accent, especially over here, means smart, or being from Britain means I'm more educated. And yeah, I get treated differently just by my voice. And I've never had privilege before, so I'm happy. Like, I'm like, I don't have this privilege in the UK. And like, I've got a little bit of voice privilege. Woohoo!
Sad that it's just got to be the voice. But
I know. I mean, I wish racism would end, but
well, still. Do you know what? It will end. We're gonna make it happen. It's our job.
We're gonna do it.
We are gonna.
Me and you are gonna just us. We don't need anybody else. We'll just do
right.
It.
Pass me the taser, Milky. I'm
right.
Going.
Yeah.
I'm coming. I'm getting on
You're
a plane.
Going.
We're gonna take on America.
Let's go.
We'll get a TV show on Channel 5. But I'll tell you something. I have had the most. This is by far the best fun I think I've ever had in an hour.
Woo.
Do you know
I'm
what
so
I mean?
Happy.
And this is gorgeous stuff. I can't wait for people to hear it. And the song coming out, Rhythm Alive, oh, it's got your name on it. Honestly, it really has.
I love that
you
song.
You like it?
I
oh,
love
good.
It.
Well, it's got your name. It's a song about you, basically. It's dedicated to you. I'm going to dedicate you in the album notes. This song, dedicated to London Hughes, the life of the party, she's got the rhythm of life. And do you know what? I can't wait to see you absolutely go. You're going higher than Goldberg.
Oh,
you
mate.
Are.
Oh, don't
I
say that because I'll
No,
cry.
I can't wait to see I can't wait to see the places you're going. It's bleeding gorgeous. I'm going to buy my ticket on the space shuttle so I can look at it from Earth and see how fantastic
oh,
and intergalactic it will be.
Thank you, Miss Darling.
I adore you. Say goodbye, Milky.
I
be
adore
polite.
You. Bye, Milky. Call me.
Oh, my God.
There you
goodbye,
go.
My beautiful babe. You've been gorgeous. I adore
Bye.
You.
Bye.
When I was at the top of me game, my face was everywhere. You'd have thought I was a communist dictator or something. I was the face of Bird's Eye Custard, HP Sauce, Spam. You name it, I was on the front of it. My club was packed to the rafters. You couldn't throw a vol-au-vent without hitting a celebrity in the face. Me and my band, The Buffet, who I'd known growing up in Canvey since we was kids, we was number one in the charts, and it felt ever so good. Working class people making music for the people. One day, I get a phone call and it's Michael Jackson. He wants to come to the Flick that weekend for the launch of Spandau Ballet's Gold. He wants to arrive in a giant Kinder Egg. It was a nightmare. We had to hire an Eddie Stobart lorry and close the M25. Canvey Council was furious. They would never bleed and forgive me. Oh my God, though. What a night. When MJ arrived, I walked him up to the roof terrace and we sat there on the swing chair, overlooking the Thames estuary, swinging back and forth. He was sucking on a rusk and sipping a can of Tizer, like he did. And he said to me, Diane. Well, I ain't going to do the accent, but he said, look, Diane, if I'm honest, I've come here for a reason. My record company, they're ever so impressed with you. And they want you to come and cut a solo record in the USA. My initial thought was, no, I can't do that to me buffet. That's cruel. And then I looked over and saw the bass player Gary trying to make Boy George sniff his finger. And I thought, do you know what, Diane? You deserve better than that. Next morning, I'm in the office and I hear a little rustling behind my drinks globe. Out pops Mystic Meg. I don't know if you know Mystic Meg. She looks a bit like Jessie J, but what's been left behind a radiator for about 6 years. She looks at me and she goes all spooky. She says, Diane, tread careful on your golden path. I pretend I didn't hear her. Next minute, I'm on MJ's private jet with Uri Geller trying to bend a spoon. I was working with a very famous producer at the time. He's called Herbert de Berg. That's right, Milky's dad. He was famous, ever so famous at the time, but he was renowned for being a taskmaster. He was mean. No wonder Milky ended up a mute. At first, it was fine. We was making hits. But then I found out the Buffet had released an album, without me, called All You Can Eat. Turns out it had gone to number one, and they was on the cover of every magazine, all over the shop, bad-mouthing me in the UK, and to be honest, it broke me heart. I couldn't handle it. How could they do it to me? I missed home. I missed the flick. I missed my friends. In the end, I turned to cowpole. I was on about 2 or 3 bottles a day. My teeth looked like cola cubes. I had to move back to Canvey, my tail between my legs. And you know what? The Buffet. They took me back. In a heartbeat. That, my gorgeous babes, that's friendship. The American label released the album anyway and it disappeared without a trace. And to be honest, I can't bear to listen to it. Except for this song, which is a song I wrote about my beautiful band, The Buffet. When we were young, we didn't have nothing, but we was living in the rhythm of life. And you know what? That's all we needed. Because we had each other.
So hard, day after day, and this is how you act when the rug gets pulled away. And despite what you'd say, in my tyrannical ways, you just play the right game to make the front page. Listen to me when I say we're living in the rhythm. Yeah, we're living in the rhythm alive. Yeah, we're living in the rhythm. Yeah, we're living in the rhythm alive. I'll get my just desserts, and I'll probably skip the main. gone are the days of the shows when they paid us a ten. It was all about the music anyway. We didn't have a dime yet to rub together. Love is the currency anyway. If we were living in the rhythm, yeah, we're living in the rhythm alive.
Thanks to my guest London Hughes today. This has been Chatting with Chorley, the Cob Pass, written by me, Diane Chorley. The music, written by my beautiful self and my beautiful, gorgeous Milky. The show is produced by my absolute guardian angel, Chris Jones. I adore you. This is a Hat Trick Podcast.